Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabulani LaFall. It was a night too dark for television. The flood hit shortly after midnight, leaving most of the city's rail yards and even portions of the livestock exchange underwater. Waterlogged listeners heard the voice of Walt Bodine as he reported on volunteers building levees to save a water pumping station in the Fairfax District across the Missouri River in Kansas City, Kansas. That was 1951. And it's clear that the Missouri River has been speaking to us ever since. In this half of the hour, we'll discuss the preventative measures that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is taking to fix damaged levees in Missouri, Nebraska, Iowa, and Kansas, all along the snaky pathway of the Missouri River. And joining us live via phone is Judd Knieven, Chief of Emergency Management for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in this region. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Judge, we learned about a lot about the role of levees during Hurricane Katrina and, of course, the Grand Forks, North Dakota floods of the Missouri in the 1990s. And flooding seems to occur more often, actually, than can actually be reported. Tell us specifically about levees and their role as we get into this discussion.
Levees in this region have been around pretty much since it was settled in the mid-1800s. And a lot of the levee districts that we work with today really have their start in the early 1900s. So folks have been constructing earthen berms to protect them from the river's flow for pretty much as long as we've been here.
Now tell us how levees are made, and then bring us into how they're actually fixed, because this seems to be a sort of anticipation thing as well as an improvisational thing as well.
Yeah, levees from a simplified viewpoint are pretty much just earthen berms. Material is taken from adjacent lands, and it's usually of two types. We call one random fill, and we call one impervious fill. Your impervious fill will be your silts and clays, and your random fill can be what they refer to as silts or sands, something like that. But basically, it's a trapezoidal-shaped piece of compacted earth. And they are used to reduce risk from flooding of various size floods. And in our area of operation, we have two types. We have what we call non-federal levees, which were constructed by public taxing districts or private landowners, and they're usually much smaller. And then we have federal levee systems, such as what protects the areas in and around Kansas City, North Kansas City, Central Industrial District, East Bottoms, and that type of thing. Those were congressionally authorized, and they were designed and constructed by the Corps of Engineers. They are owned and operated locally, though.
So you do have a mix of private and public sector funding that builds and maintains these levees?
That's correct. There's no one governing body that oversees levees in most states, and most of them were generated from local interest, and a lot of times it was local funding that provided the impetus for construction.
Does that hodgepodge, though, Judd, create a conundrum? For instance, Jody Farratt, chief of the Corps for the Missouri River Basin Water Management Office, told the Kansas City Star that the system, meaning the levee system, meaning the whole stretch, meaning the whole way that everything is put together, is vulnerable. Can you elaborate on some of his thoughts?
Yeah, it is vulnerable. It because the levees are different size and they protect at different levels. It really depends on what type of flooding you have. And this year was very unique because this is the first time since the main stem reservoir system has been put in place, and that final dam was closed in 1964, that flooding in the upper basin affected us here in the lower basin. The flooding we predominantly have seen since 1964 in the lower basin has come from local rainfall. 1993, all of the water fell below Gavin's Point Dam, which is the lowest main stem reservoir. And then 95 and 97 were also years where we had experienced lots of rainfall in the lower basin, in the Grand River Basin, in the Osage River Basin, Kansas River Basin. And since 2007 up until this summer, again, we experienced substantial flooding in and along the lower Missouri River, but it was all due to tributary inflows and local precipitation.
Well, tell us about this sort of ecological pattern and the flow, so to speak, of the river and how basins and tributaries all contribute to the flow and potential dangers of flooding. Take us up, start in Montana. You mentioned there were some upper basin activity that affected us down here. So how does that actually work?
Well, there's the main stem reservoirs, and their primary purpose is flood control, and then they have seven other authorized purposes. But their primary function is to catch runoff from the mountain snowpack in the spring, and to catch runoff from the plain snowpack at about the same time, and then precipitation. And then they meter that through various reservoirs. And then when you get to the Gavin's Point Reservoir, which is at Yankton, South Dakota, it really becomes a tap. And at that location, what it does is it meters the water into the lower Missouri River Basin. So all those tributary inflows and things that we're seeing up there meter into all the reservoirs. The reservoirs hold them, and then over time they release that water downstream where it eventually reaches the Mississippi and provides a great deal of flow from about St. Louis to the Ohio River.
So what the levees are doing is not actually blocking the water, but in a sense controlling the flow.
The levees themselves actually prevent flooding in the overbank. So when we talk about floodplain and floodway, if you looked at North Kansas City, downtown airport, for example, that area couldn't be there if it were not protected by a levee system, because it would flood on a fairly frequent basis. But that because they put that levee system in there, you're able to develop behind that levee and reduce the risk from most flood events. The Corps doesn't like to say that we can prevent flooding in all cases, because we don't really know what the maximum or catastrophic flood looks like, because we're only dealing with a period of record that's a little over 100 years that we, you know, as a society have been collecting records and measurements on the Missouri River.
So you say it's only been 100 years, and given that, who collects that, and how is it measured for preventative measures? You only have 100 years to go back. So how do you then deploy your levee maintenance based on what you already know and based on precedent?
Well, the 100 years of record is used to help us manage the main stem reservoirs and help us determine how we should be metering flow through those projects. It also tells us when we had periods of peak flow and when we had periods of drought. That's very evident in the record. Now, as far as who collects that information, the Corps of Engineers collects information, of course. The U.S. Geological Survey collects information. National Weather Service collects information. And we partner and collaborate with all of those folks when we're determining and how to use the information, how to use the forecast, and how we look forward to the coming year, and how we operate our main stem dams, and then what pressure we put on ourselves to repair levees that were damaged in the prior flooding. And if you look at this area right here, we try to get everything together by 1 March because that's really when we start getting into our spring flooding season. And it's going to be a real challenge for us to do this year because of the current budget constraints.
When you say you need to get everything together by the 1st of March, what does everything together entail?
Well, I'll tell you, just speaking on Kansas City District area of responsibility, we had 57 requests for assistance, meaning that 57 levee sponsors said that they had damages to their levee systems that met our criteria, and were asking for federal assistance in helping to repair those. And so we prioritize those 57 requests, and we do that based on life safety. If there are life safety consequences behind a levee system, like there are homes or communities or businesses, daytime populations, that type of thing, then they rank really high. And currently our focus is in northwest Missouri, particularly Holt County, Missouri, where we had some non-federal levee systems that were substantially damaged. And what we try to do is we try to go in there, work with the sponsor. They have to provide some cost share associated with that, but then we design a repair, and then we oversee the construction of that, and we have to try to do that and get that in place by the beginning of March.
So up in northwest Missouri, Holt County, how does that affect us down here? From a potential flood perspective, from a potential flow perspective, from a geological and ecological perspective, how does that affect us down here?
From a big picture sense, when you lose levees, you actually end up with more storage in the floodplain. But most of those levees are they provide a small order or level of protection. And if you look at it like we do the traditional sense where we talk about a base flood elevation or a 100-year level of protection, these things provide like a 5 to 25-year level of protection. So they're much smaller than that, and they really act as speed bumps. So like in this event here, which we think may have been on the order of a 200 to 400-year event, you know, as the water flowed through the system, it basically overwhelmed these non-federal systems. It overtopped them. Once it overtopped them, the levees breached, and it filled the floodplain full of water. And when that water enters the floodplain, it provides storage. So that's less water that stays confined within the channel during the peak of the flood. And that does help downstream somewhat. But all that water eventually has to come through the Kansas City Reach. There were other factors that really helped us more, particularly in Kansas City and downstream this year, than levees overtopping upstream. And the primary thing that occurred was it was very dry, and we didn't have much tributary inflow. Had we had a lot of water coming out of the Kansas River, it would have been a different scenario for the Kansas City Reach. It would have been the same in central Missouri if we'd had more water coming out of the Grand River. But we were fortunately, from a flooding standpoint, we were very dry in both the state of Kansas and the state of Missouri this summer.
And so what type of activity based on that are we seeing with what has happened to the Missouri River this year as we look forward to that March 1st benchmark?
The Corps right now is continuing to release water and get the reservoirs back in place for spring. They were supposed to be at a target of, we talk in cubic feet per second as a measure of discharge. We were supposed to be at 20,000 cubic feet per second yesterday. At Gavin's Point right now, they're running about 22,000, so they're running slightly higher. They're trying to evacuate just a little bit more water. So when we go into winter and we have to pull back releases, we'll be in better position come spring. For us, you know, we're rushing to fix levees. We have a lot of hurdles, a lot of constraints. The principal one is funding. And then when we get to January, we'll really start a concerted effort to make sure that our sponsors are trained on how to flood fight, how to take care of themselves come this spring should we not get everything back in place. And we as an agency will actually be creating our own plan for what kind of temporary measures we can get in place should we not be able to fix all the levees.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Joining us by phone is Judd Knieven, Chief of Emergency Management for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Kansas City, how did floods in 2010 and in 2011 affect your area? Do you have any questions about the nature of improvements for the Army Corps of Engineers and what they're making? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us on Facebook or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're looking to hear your stories. Perhaps you are one of the purveyors of the non-federal levies, and you'd like to talk about your collaboration with the Corps of Engineers and what challenges you face in your neck of the woods or bank of the river, so to speak. Judd, what have been the most vulnerable parts or problem parts of the river or flood planes that have been identified by the Corps? Before we get into the specifics of the budget constraints, what are the most vulnerable parts?
Currently, the most vulnerable areas are those in upstream of Kansas City, and particularly Holt County, Missouri. Holt County has been affected by significant flooding for the last 5 years. And, you know, they really need to get the levees back in place because it's very critical to their agricultural community and to making sure those folks can get their lives back in order. But it's been very difficult for them because when you're faced by the same challenge each year, it becomes harder and harder to recover.
The Republican Representative Sam Graves of Missouri says the Corps of Engineers is being asked to juggle too many priorities. Do you agree? And if so, how do you identify those priorities?
We have a lot of things that we do for the nation, and And the work we do is very valuable. And it's not just in the water resource development or the flood control arena, but from a standpoint of flood control and repairing levees and that type of thing, the Corps has made this their number one priority. And in the current climate, we are moving money from other programs into levee rehab as quickly as we can to address particularly the levee systems that pose the greatest threat to life safety. It's a tough challenge on any given day, but it's been made more tough this year, particularly by the funding constraints.
And speaking of the funding constraints, according to news reports, it would cost about $253 million to make all of the Missouri River Basin repairs, more than an approximate 60 projects, but you only have $68 million available. How are you dealing with that?
That's true. It's pretty tough. We face tough calls from our levy sponsors every day, on where they stand from a priority standpoint. But in the Kansas City District, we've been fortunate. Our top eight priorities have been funded for construction. We are moving as quickly as we can to get equipment on the ground and to start moving dirt. Of those eight, five of those are non-federal levy systems. Two of them are in Holt County. They're called Union Township and Holt County Number 10. They protect the Big Lake, Missouri area. The next two are in the Rushville, Missouri area. One of them is called Rushville, Sugar Lake, and the other one's Bean Lake. Those are directly across from Atchison, Kansas. Those both suffered some pretty significant overtopping breaches and pose not only a threat to life safety, but also to infrastructure and transportation. And then the fifth is down near Carrollton, Missouri. It's called Walkendall Levy District. And then I have three federal levees. Two of them are at St. Joe. One protects the Elwood, Kansas side. The other one protects the South St. Joe side. And then I'm going to also be working on the downtown airport here at North Kansas City levee that suffered some what we call foundation damage.
Yeah, I used to commute in from that area, and you could see when the levels weren't where they needed to be.
Right, right. It's very tough. This year we did something that we haven't had to do in years past, and that really was we had to really take a critical look at it, what constitutes a life safety issue, where are the economic consequences for each of these systems, what's the failure likelihood, if based on the current known damages, what is the chance that it would fail in another flood event? And then we ranked those all together to kind of put our priorities together so we knew where to put the money first.
We have a message from Beth, who writes, since we build oil, gas, wire, and conduit pipelines, can we not build water lines that could directly access other areas in our country? It seems that one place will flood while another has a drought or wildfires. That's a solution from Beth. Can you speak on what Beth has wrote in to us to say, the distribution of water flow?
Now, we refer to that as diversion, and that is a politically hot topic, and you're talking about diverting water out of the Missouri River Basin into areas in need. That's much like what occurs on the Colorado River.
Yeah, in California.
In California, right.
The subject of Chinatown, actually, the
yeah,
movie.
And exactly, and the Colorado River, if you look at it as an example, is one of those water systems that there's the water resource itself is actually over allocated. But the only reason that they're allowed and there's still water in the river is that people don't use their allocations. So they barter and trade them. And that's something that, that in the future the Missouri River is going to have to face, the Mississippi River will have to face, because everybody believes that water may be the defining resource or topic in the future for the country is if we go through climate change. But right now it is politically hot potato, and there are no plans to divert water out of the Missouri River Basin for other use. It's challenging, too, from an engineering standpoint, because it's timing. When we have a flood and you want to get rid of the extra water, you have to send it somewhere, and then they have to be able to store it until they have a requirement to use it, and that's just kind of contrary to the natural hydrologic cycle. You know, as water, you send water somewhere, you're going to store it in a big tank or underground, because if you put it on the surface, it'll evaporate.
And of course, that requires risk assessments and feasibility studies that also require money as well.
Exactly.
We have Mary from Indy. Judd, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you. I love your show.
Thank you.
I had a question. Well, I should tell you what happened to me this summer is I live along the Little Blue River where it comes out right just north of Sibley on the Missouri. And we were flooded in. We live on a dead-end road, and we're right on the river, Little Blue. And we had to take a canoe to get in and out for 7 weeks this summer. And my question, and this was all caused by the Gavin's Point Dam release. And we've been flooded in before, but only for a day or two. So we're used to the flooding. But there are a lot of rumors going around about the Army Corps of Engineers and the lakes north of the Gavin's Point Dam and how they're used for fishing and touristry and how they were kept up before the huge snowfall so that it could be used for recreation. And so I'm concerned with what kind of decisions are being made north of that Gavin's Point Dam and for what reasons. I've also heard that there's lots of houses built on land up there that were not supposed to be built on. It was supposed to be floodplain for when the river, the snowmelt came and the lakes could rise.
Judd, can you address some of Mary's concerns? Gavin
yeah.
Point seems to be a fulcrum point, both in the discussion and both in the flow of the Missouri River southward.
Right. It goes back to the main stem reservoir system. It has eight authorized purposes. Number one is flood control. And then they follow navigation, hydropower, irrigation, water supply, water quality, recreation, and fish and wildlife. In the Corps, we've stated this numerous times this year that we operated the main stem reservoirs this year and the last few years solely for flood control purposes. What is hard to understand is how you balance the demands on all those authorized purposes. The only authorized purpose that requires you to have space to store water behind the dams is flood control. All the other seven actually require that you have water present behind the dams to support them. And so it's a constant challenge. And I do understand people's argument, particularly in their situation where they basically had to canoe for 7 weeks. You know, they've been through this before, and if they were there in 1993, that event only lasted about 57 days. This year I activated my Emergency Operations Center on May 26th, and I didn't deactivate it until October 17th. Very different flood events, and the duration this year was not only challenging for the property owners adjacent to the river, but it was challenging for the Corps, and how do you manage the system, and how do we address it from a flood response and then a flood recovery viewpoint.
We should mention, Judd, sorry to interrupt you, we should mention that Mary is a victim of the flooding in and around the Little Blue River, and she's calling in from Independence. Let me hit you with this. Just in Missouri, rain and snow melt has flooded about 207,000 acres of agricultural land, if stats from the University of Missouri College of Agriculture are accurate. With such staggering odds, how do you then continue to pick problem areas and allow for unforeseen ecological events?
That challenge will continue into the future. You know, the way they addressed it in the 1940s with the flood control acts was they put in place the main stem reservoirs. That was seen as a solution for the future, and that took a lot of foresight, and it burdened a lot of people, particularly up north, when they had to acquire the land and flood their land. That was followed by the Pick-Sloan plan of levee systems, where we came in with these congressionally authorized and federally designed and constructed levee projects. That was never completed in its entirety. That was one thing that probably would have better connected the system as a whole, and you wouldn't have this patchwork of federal levees and non-federal levees down the system. The federal levees also tend to sit on the edge of the floodway, so they allow for greater capacity at these higher flood levels, whereas the non-federal levels tend to affect these lower-level floods and flood stages.
Well, Judd, how come these projects aren't completed? How come these projects aren't completed over the years? You come up with different solutions. You have non-federal and private sector or sponsor levies. How come they never actually get completed? Is it the political changes or the political tide, so to speak?
There are a lot of reasons. You know, it takes a while to get them going. It requires congressional funding. Over time, the costs tend to increase if you can't get it done quickly. So your price tag goes up, which then causes folks to raise their eyebrows. Is it worth it? And then locally, it requires a lot of partnerships locally, where they have to provide real estate. They have to form these big taxing districts, and they have to provide funding and that type of thing. And if it goes on too long, that tends to fall apart too. And that's what happened to a lot of the projects. Is over time, it took too long to get the projects off the ground. They became more expensive. There was less political interest, and there was less local interest. You know, a good example is we have an authorized project near Jefferson City that was authorized a number of years ago. After the flood in 1993, folks became interested in it again. The Corps did the feasibility report. We went in and actually put a preliminary design in place, and then locally the interest fell apart, and it has not been constructed. And that'll probably continue in that pattern until you have another significant flood event down there that damages a lot, and then public interest will be high again to go back in there and do something with that project.
What is the worst-case scenarios that you're considering? You said you're picking your projects based on potential problems, potential life-threatening problems.
Right. It really goes initially to failure likelihood. If a levee is overtopped and breached, and meaning that so when the river comes back up, the floodwaters can flow back into that bottom again, then those go to our number one priority. And then that's quickly followed by projects that have a lot of population behind them. And by a lot of population, it can be 10 people or it can be 500 people. You know, but if there's a potential for loss of life, that ranks really high.
It ranks high indeed. Judd Knieven is the Chief of Emergency Management for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We've been talking about levee repairs and maintenance that need to be done all along the Missouri River from Montana all the way down the Show Me State and the challenges that lay ahead. Thank you for joining us on Central Standard, sir.
Yep, you're welcome.
And tune in tomorrow for a music show with all your favorite music hosts here at KCUR. These include Chuck Haddix, Renee Blanche, and Bill Shapiro. They'll be sharing songs for this time of the year. We had help from Tamika Weatherspoon. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next with the Book Doctor's top picks for 2011. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.